And I thought, well, that's just a dream that will never become reality anyways. But I was just so curious about this staged race, and it seemed so hard and so far away from where we live, you know, like to go all the way out to the desert in Morocco.
That was Caroline Weep, and this is episode 82 of the Inspired Souls podcast. Hi, I'm Carolyn, and I'm a road runner.
And I'm Kim, and I'm a trail runner. Welcome to our podcast, where we bring the communities of trail and road running together and explore the parallels between running and life. Today, we welcome Caroline Weep back to the show. Caroline is a 51-year-old ultra runner from Winnipeg, Manitoba, who just returned home from completing the Marathon des Sables, a 250-kilometer, six-stage, seven-day race in the deserts of Morocco. She was one of 15 Canadians among 1,000 racers representing 54 countries. Since the race began in 1986, only 20% of the racers have been women. We couldn't wait to hear about this fascinating race and her experience in Morocco. In this episode, we talk about why this race intrigued her, what her training and preparation was like, the logistics of arriving at the start line, the self-supported nature of the race, the highs and lows on the way to the finish line, and what she learned about herself and her own mental strength. I've always found multi-day stage races very intriguing and think you will find this conversation both interesting and inspiring. Without further ado, let's talk to Caroline. Hi, Caroline. Welcome to the Inspired Souls podcast. We're so excited to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back on the show. I'm super excited to talk to you ladies again.
We just can't wait to dive right in there. I've been literally holding myself back from just giving you a phone call to get all the details. But we wanted to record it so that others could get those details too. Maybe before we just dive in there, if you could just give our listeners a high level kind of summary of who you are. You were first on our podcast in episode 34 last year. And interestingly enough, you mentioned one of your bucket list races that was the Marathon des Sables. So if you want full details of who Caroline is and everything about her, you can go back and listen to episode 34. But anyways, yeah, Caroline, why don't you give us a little intro of yourself for a moment?
Sure. My name is Caroline Weep. I am 51 years old and I have a husband and two kids. I live in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I am a full-time nurse and I am a runner, and I started running in 2010. About 12 years ago. So my first ultra marathon was in 2014 with a 50K in Calgary. And then 2015 was my first longer run. I did the Lemming Loop 24 hours and ran 150 kilometers in that race, and have been running ultra marathons since. And MDS was one of my bucket list races, and I was able and fortunate enough to participate this year.
What a bucket did you choose? Like, that's a barrel of a race. Why don't you give us a quick summary of what is Marathon des Sables? Where is it? You know, tell us a little bit about the race.
Marathon des Sables is a six-stage race over 7 days, and it is in Northern Africa, in Morocco. We fly into Ereshkigal, and I flew in from Paris, and then drive a couple hours into the desert from the airport by bus and get dropped off in the middle of the desert where the race is being held through the Sahara Desert all 7 days. So we were there 2 days prior to race start in the desert.
So it's 7 days, but I think you're running six of those 7 days. Is that correct?
Well, you can run 7 days. Like, the one stage is over 2 days.
Okay.
So you can choose to, you can have 35 hours to complete the sixth stage. So you can either choose to run through the day and just keep going till you're finished that stage, or you can run the day and then sleep most of the night or rest and then run the remaining of the sixth stage on the second day.
Okay, so each stage is a fixed distance.
Correct.
And is it all different distances? Like, do you have an extra long day and a short day, or how does that work?
Yes. Each day is a certain distance, and it's only revealed to the runners the day before the race actually starts how long your distance will be, what your route will be, and what your cutoff times are for each day.
So I had no idea. That is brutal.
It's all put nicely with maps and times and everything in a road book. And you get the booklet the day before your race starts. And then you can start studying preparing for your stages. What you do know is ahead of time that there is a marathon stage and there is a long stage, but we didn't know exactly how long the stage would be around, given around 80 kilometers. But we didn't know what the terrain would be for that 80 kilometers. Will it be lots of mountains? Will it be very flat? Will it be lots of sand dunes? We didn't know. So it ended up being almost 86 kilometers for the long stage on day 4 and 5. And I liked the night to run or walk. Mm-hmm. So that was, I knew before I went that I wasn't going to stop overnight and rest unless, of course, I was not feeling well or there was a reason I had to. But I knew I was just going to keep going till I finished.
Well, I would imagine it's super hot in the desert, right? So there's that advantage perhaps of going through the night, right? Where it's a little cooler. Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, it's cooler, but also I find it too hard to stop and then get going again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it.
I most likely wouldn't be sleeping anyways. Mm-hmm. So why wait, you know? Just when I start, I like to go till I'm done.
So forgive me here. I'm trying to process this. So multi-day staged races, I mean, you are stopping and getting and going again every single day.
Yes, you do.
But this is one stage that could be completed in 2 days or one day. How long would your stop have been if you had decided to do it over 2 days? Like literally just a few hours and then you're up and going again?
Well, you have to still complete it within the 35 hours.
Oh, I see.
So you don't have, you're not given 48 hours. You're given 35 hours.
Okay.
So it depends on how fast you're going through the first day and how long you want to take up. Like you have that option because there is so much time to complete it. You have the time to take stops during the long stage, which a lot of athletes that aren't used to long distance were doing. Like there was people sleeping everywhere, just lying on the ground and resting. I don't know if they were sleeping, but they took their backpack off, their sleeping bag out, and they did take rests during the night, and then I guess got going so that they knew, depending on which aid station or checkpoint they were at, to take their rest, right? So they knew how many kilometers they had left to the finish line and how many hours, so to kind of give themselves.
So I have to ask, why this race? Like, it sounds very unique. So tell us kind of how you heard about it. What intrigued you about this race? How long have you been eyeing it up?
Honestly, I don't know exactly where I heard about this race for the very first time. I know it was early on when I started long distance running that I heard about this staged race, and I was very intrigued by it. And, you know, it seemed like way, way out of my league and reach to ever do anything like this. And I thought, well, that's just a dream that will never become reality anyways. But I was just so curious about this staged race, and it seemed so hard and it seemed so long and difficult and so far away from where we live, you know, like to go all the way out to the desert in Morocco to do something like this. But then the more I searched online about the race, I found out there was actually some people in Manitoba that had completed this race before. And I looked them up and I got in touch with them and we talked about the race. And I thought, well, if they can do it, maybe I can do it, you know? And so I talked to some of the people and actually a good friend of mine, I think I mentioned her in the last podcast, is Sue Lucas. She's the other Manitoba woman that has completed this race as well. So I did a lot of talking to her about it. And she always kept saying, Caroline, if it's your dream, you got to go for it. Just do it. You know, like if you really want to do it, just do it. And so I put that on my bucket list. And I thought, well, I really want to challenge myself. I had been running 100-mile races, and I was becoming a bit comfortable with the 100-mile distance, you know, like that was, yes. It's kind of my favorite distance now, you know, like to just go all day and all night kind of thing, you know. I'm never really racing any of these races to win or to compete, just to finish them. And I wanted to challenge myself to something bigger, to something, you know, something new and different. And there's so many YouTube videos that people have made about this race. And I kept watching YouTube video after YouTube video when I'm on the treadmill. And I'm like, my goodness, that looks so hard, but it looks so fun too. You know, like I just wanted to do it.
Yeah. When it is intriguing, it is very different. And like you said, so very different from what Manitoba is like, I can definitely see the allure. So knowing what I just said, that you live in Manitoba, where, you know, there are a couple months of the year where it can get pretty hot, but most of them are not. Most of them are quite the opposite.
Especially the last six.
Yes. yeah, exactly. That. Like you just came out of a Manitoban winter. You don't have mountains to train in there. What was your training like? How did you prepare for this race?
I actually did, especially the last few months, were mostly training on the treadmill. Sad as it is, but that was basically what, Carolyn, you know how cold it was this year. And I just, I just couldn't get myself to be out for that long, for long runs. And I didn't do any very long runs, actually. I just did a lot of back-to-back longer runs after work. At home, I have a treadmill and I would put it at an incline. And I would power walk with my heavy backpack, you know, for 1 to 2 hours after work and put the heater beside just to get used to the heat and drinking large amounts of water, because it's difficult to drink that much water, even though you don't feel thirsty, but you're sweating so lot. So you have to get your gut used to that too. And also I was actually, for family related reasons, I went to South America twice this year. So I had that advantage of training a little bit in the heat there, although there's no mountains there. I think they're flatter than Winnipeg.
if that's possible.
But what they had is they had the heat, you know, it was like 45 degrees, 46 degrees. And I would, you know, go for runs at noon when the sun was the hottest out on a highway where there's no shelter, you know, total exposure, and just to kind of get used to running in the heat. So I had that advantage. So I did that for two in June and November I was there. And then I also went about 3 weeks before the race. I went for a weekend to Nevada to do a long run in Las Vegas.
So I really want to highlight what you just said here. You specifically, A, tried to train as close to race conditions as you could with what you had to work with. You chose to run in the hottest part of the day. You chose to run in the most exposed environment within that hottest part of the day. So many of us are like, oh, it's hot, I'll wait till evening to go. Oh, you know, I'll run in the forest because there's shade. But that doesn't help you any on race day. Like trying to purposefully find the most uncomfortable conditions that you might experience on race day so that you can adjust to them and get used to them and mentally become okay with it, I think is really important.
And also something that you said there, like, I mean, it's a 250 kilometer race, right? So I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, like there's a lot of walking in there. Like you're not going to always be running, right? So you've got the distance, 250, like an enormous distance, plus the heat. So that really equals a lot of power hiking. So you power hiked and you changed kind of the approach to training to just how much time can I spend on my feet? Is that the way that you were thinking about it?
Yes, I did. I would say 75% of the time I was walking because I had a very heavy backpack.
Right.
I had to fight the elements, you know, the heat, the wind, the mountains, the climbing, which I hadn't trained any, like I hadn't done any hill repeats, really. I've walked uphill on my treadmill, but I hadn't done any actual mountain climbing at all. And there was so much of it. Like on day three, we summited three mountains.
What altitude is Morocco at? Like, were you dealing with any altitude issues, or was it just
that is
vertical?
The same as here.
Okay, yeah,
it's
so
just
that's
vertical.
Good.
So, okay. But approximately 3,300 meters for the week.
Okay, so that's around 11,000, 12,000 feet.
Yeah, so there is climbing. Yeah, so the desert is not just flat and hot.
Right. So you were literally carrying the backpack, like in your training, to get used to what that would feel like?
Yes, I wore the actual backpack that I wore during the race. I wore it for training. And I had most of our pantry ingredients in the backpack. Mm-hmm. So I said to my husband, you're looking for some extra mayonnaise or pasta sauce. It's probably in my backpack because I put it in there for weight.
That's awesome.
All our canned food.
That is so good. You're so creative.
Yeah, I put bags of rice in there and stuff to add the weight. So
awesome.
For training.
Well, so you mentioned, like, you know, you talked to other people. There was videos online. You gathered up information from all different sources. So does anything stand out to you as like the best piece of advice you got, like something that you never would have thought of unless you had done your research?
All the advice I got from everybody together just kind of made it better for me because I had it, you know, like I can't remember if there was one specific piece of advice. Okay. What was really, really helpful had really nothing to do with the race itself, was just that we're going through with this COVID pandemic stuff and all that stuff. And that there was a runner from Winnipeg who had just gone this fall to the same race. So he was able to help me with a lot of my anxiety around the pandemic stuff. It had nothing to do with the race. It just had, you know, everything to do with getting there.
But that's part of the race, right? When you go to an away race, the logistics of just arriving there safely and in one piece is kind of part of the race.
That's exactly what was going to be my next question, was kind of tell us about your trip there and the days leading up to the race. You mentioned that you went through Paris. Paint us a bit of a picture of you know, your journey to the start line.
Okay, so I had started, like I had registered, actually came up on my visa statement just today as we were going through our for our income tax papers and everything, when I paid for the race. And it's exactly a year ago. It was last year in April when I registered and paid for the race. So a year of preparation to booking flights, to finding hotel, and to, you know, getting my gear together. And there's just so many things. I was making a list. I was writing everything down, what people told me, oh, you need this, you need that. And every time I thought of something that I needed, I would write it down. And what really stressed me out a lot in the last few weeks leading up to the race was the COVID tests. Because, and I was lucky that France had just gone to a green zone. I did not need a COVID test to fly out of Winnipeg. I did not need a COVID test to come into France, which up until a few weeks before the race, I did. So I was planning all these, when will I get my test to go to, you know, in Winnipeg? Will I need an appointment? So I was already planning all that. But then that changed a few weeks before, which was really good and very helpful and less stress. However, I still needed a COVID test, a negative COVID test at the airport in Paris before boarding the plane to Morocco. And it had to be within 48 hours. So if I did it the day before in Winnipeg, it would be expired by the time I got on the plane. So I had to do it the day I left. So I had to go to the Winnipeg airport, get swabbed, get on the plane, not knowing will I be negative or positive. Of course, you know, you hear these stories of people being at the airport and testing positive without symptoms. Will it happen to me? So what if I receive my test in Paris and it's positive, then I would have to get turned around. So of course I stressed over it, but then, and in the end, I just thought, you know what, if this is meant to be, it's all going to work out. I'm just going to do my best and that's all I can do. And I'm going to sleep at night and stop stressing over. But yeah. I must admit, I was incredibly stressed leading up to it. Just will it all work out? And in the end, like it almost always does, right? It all worked out. And then I couldn't open my COVID test. Like the link they sent me with the results would not open. And then it being 7 hours later there, it's middle in the night in Winnipeg. So I couldn't even call back and ask.
And didn't you get your results like an hour before you boarded the plane? Wasn't it really, really tight?
Yes, it was tight. I can't remember exactly how many hours it was. It was really tight. I did get them earlier, but I couldn't see them.
You just couldn't open them.
I couldn't open the link. So I sent an email and luckily, I guess they have a 24-hour lab that checks emails. So they were able to send it again. And then, of course, I could open it. And the hotel lady, just as I was checking out to go to the airport, was very kind and printed it for me. So I had it on a piece of paper just the way it was expected. And it was just all like it. Oh, like within the hour of getting to the airport, it was.
Oh my gosh. Were you traveling by yourself, or did you have someone to share this stress with?
No, I was all by myself. I did meet one of the photographers that came from Canada. He was a French guy from Quebec City. He ended up staying in the same hotel, so we ended up taking a cab together to the airport, and then we kind of stayed together from there on, you know, like we're the two Canadians, you know, flying together. So, so that was kind of nice to have.
Amazing. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So you arrive in Morocco. Paint us a picture of that. Like, was it what you were expecting? How long before the race began did you actually arrive? Were you nervous?
Like, so this was like 2 days before the race actually starts. Our plane landed in the middle, which seemed like in the middle of the desert. And it was this tiny little airport. It's kind of like the size of DePauw Airport, if you've ever been up north. and except there's no lakes around it. There's just sand everywhere. I was on a charter flight for just athletes. So it was arranged by the race. So I had to pay the race for the flight. And they arranged the flight going from Paris to Morocco, and then back from Morocco back to Paris, because lots of international travelers flew into Paris and then to Morocco. Mm. But you walk off the plane, it's hot, the sun is bright, it's in the distance, you see the mountains and sand everywhere, and you hear this Moroccan musicians playing their music, and they were serving tea, like really, really hot, very sweet tea. It tasted really good, though. And they were serving cookies and some dainties and nuts that you could eat for all of us. So kind of like a welcome.
Welcome to the hot desert with a cup of tea.
I think we had to like do 2 or 3 police checks to get through the gate there. And then our luggage was waiting on the other side. And then we all got on the bus and then they drove us into the desert, into the Sahara Desert, where the race was to start in 2 days. And when we got there, we got a lunch bag. We got our bagged lunch. And so we got to go find our tent number, which was assigned previously. And it was, you stay together by country. So it was all the Canadians. We had 2 tents. And one tent, it happened to be me, the only one that spoke no French with all the French people.
Oh my.
And then the tent next to us, there was 4 of them, they spoke English. So, but it didn't matter so much. So they all knew how to speak English, but their primary language was French. So they spoke French most of the time. And of course they filled me in if I was asking or whatever.
So there were 5 of you in a tent?
8.
8. Oh, sorry. 8.
It's like a sardine box. Yeah.
Okay.
Your sleeping bags are all just lined up beside each other, and you're sleeping on the ground beside a complete stranger in a sleeping bag. And of course, there was people that snore.
Snore, and by day six, you're probably...
Yeah, everyone smells and stinks everybody the same.
Yep. So, okay, let's get into the details of this race now. So let's start off with, did you have any specific goals other than just to finish and experience it? Did you have in the back of your mind any goals?
No. My primary goal was, like always, I wanted to finish. There was no such thing as I'm dropping out. If awesome. I had not finished, it would have been not voluntarily. I can tell you that. They would have had to pull me from the race because I came to finish and I got my finish. But I wanted to finish and I wanted to beat each cutoff time with enough time to feel comfortable. I didn't want to push cutoff times if I could help it. And I think I did pretty good. I was actually just looking over that and comparing my times. And there was 2 days where I only had 2 hours left. Day two, that was my worst day. Day two, you had to reach the mountain by 4 p.m. I don't even know really how many hours there would be left. But if you'd didn't make it to the mountain to start climbing that last mountain by four, then you had to drop out because it was too dangerous. Very, very dangerous climbs, like very steep, rocky climbs with actually, you couldn't see a trail. Like there was, you just followed the pink markings on the rocks and climbed over them. There wasn't an actual trail, you know?
So if someone doesn't meet a cutoff on day two, are they done? Like they don't get to carry on? Oh my goodness.
There was actually on one occasion, two runners, they were within sight when the time was up and they let them choose if they wanted to. They said the race, they said, we will let you guys start tomorrow, your next stage, if you choose to and if you want to. And both runners decided to, and they both made it in the end. But they didn't actually cross the finish line in the given time, but they were already coming. Like it's it was so tight. Like it was so they let it up to them, and they did announce that the next day at the start line that the race had made that decision. The race director had made that decision to give them a chance to go again the next day.
Can you imagine going through all the hoops that you went through, all the training, all the COVID testing, all the traveling, and then to be out on day two? That would be heartbreaking.
Yeah. And day two was the hardest for me too.
What about day two made it hard?
Day two started out with a lot of climbing and sand dunes, like long climbs in the sand. And then we got caught in a storm. I've never, ever lived through anything like that. I'm glad I lived through it and I did it because it's just so unique. I don't know if I'll ever experience anything like that again. It was just sandblasting for hours and hours, like literally so thick, the sand that you couldn't see, 3 meters in front of you. So we clustered together. We huddled together in a cluster of runners just to stay upright with our heavy packs walking into this wind. There was no running. Everybody was walking. You had to just push yourself. It was so hard. I asked at the finish line how strong the wind was, and they said it was 90 kilometers an hour winds.
Whoa.
The sandblasting on my shins, on my legs, it was started to bleed. It's like tiny little glass crystals just cutting in your skin. And I had my poles in my hands here. They were just becoming raw, my knuckles, from the wind hitting it, like the sand hitting. It was like literally sandblasting your body.
You understand why people, who traditionally live in the desert wear, the long robes and the turbans and everything's covered, right? It's loose, but it's covered probably not just for sun, but for the sand.
Yes. And that is, that is all these hours we were walking in a sandstorm. I didn't drink water and I didn't eat anything. Oh. I didn't eat any calories in because I was so covered. You know, I had the hat with the neck thing and then the balaclava around it just to tighten everything up and my glasses. And I got my little hose with water underneath there. And then it was just such a disaster because everything went just like flying, you know, like, and if you lose something, that's gone. Like, don't even try to go running after anything, you know. If you let go of something, that's gone. Like, even your sticks, like your running sticks, like you had to really hang on to them because the wind just wanted to catch everything and take it away.
Wow.
It was brutal. So then, of course, I'm running low in energy. Now, by 4 o'clock, I got to reach that mountain, right? And climb it. Up and down.
It's not done at 4 o'clock.
It's not done at 4 o'clock. The wind, like the sandblasting stopped when we turned into the mountain.
Okay.
But the wind was still very strong. But when we came around, kind of around the bend, we got blocked from the wind. But then you could really feel how hot it actually was.
Oh, okay.
It was baking. It was so hot. And then, of course, you take everything off and you start drinking. And I drank all my water and then I didn't have any water, you know, and then I took some sugary snack that I had with me and it gave me a little bit of energy. And I made it like I just started climbing the mountain and I was out of water. I was sweating really heavy. I had no energy. I was starting to feel really faint. I sat down on a rock and my backpack kind of resting on the rock behind me. And I kind of laid into the backpack. And every time I lifted my head, I felt faint. And I thought, oh my goodness. And I started praying, God, let me get up this mountain and down the other side. That's all I'm asking today. I need to finish this. I need to get over this mountain. Like there's no, this is not the time to be faint. This is not the time to, you know, be out of energy or have no water. But I asked a lady that came, I said, can you spare a little bit of water? And she gave me a little bit. I put it on my head just to stay, you know, get that dizziness off. Mm-hmm. And then the second lady, she gave me about a quarter of a bottle to drink. And I sipped on that. And I thought, I just made myself, Caroline, you got to get up now. You're not dizzy. I told myself, I'm not dizzy. Just take deep breaths and slowly, one step at a time, up that mountain. And I got up and I just started moving up. And I don't know. I thought about it later. I don't even really remember everything from that day. It seems like, you know, like it's
pieces. You probably had mild heat stroke or exhaustion, I'm sure.
Yeah, because I didn't drink and eat through that whole, all those hours we walked in that sandstorm, right? And still working really hard.
Yeah. So what time did you actually finish or how many miles did you have left once you started the mountain?
Well, that mountain, and then you come down the mountain, I think there was another 5 kilometer run in to the finish, which is never a run in to the finish at the desert. It's either a couple of sand dunes or, you know, ankle deep sand to march through and just a power walk through the sand and some dunes and then a really rocky terrain. And going down the mountain wasn't like I could run it down. Because there was so many rocks to climb over. I had to sit down, dangle my feet down, drop down. And don't forget, I have a backpack. And it got caught a couple of times on the rocks. And then I was kind of dangling, you know. Like, I was so terrified in some of those places. I was just, and I'm scared of heights. That didn't help.
Caroline.
I'm not even going to be terrified. I'm not even going to be scared. I wanted a challenge. I wanted something new.
Yeah.
This is
it.
Suck it up.
This is what you came for.
This is what I came for. I had to remind myself a few times why I was there and why I was doing this.
Well, what was your mindset like at this point? Because it's day two, right?
Yes.
And it's kicking your butt, it sounds like.
Yes.
And what did your mind ever go to a place of like, oh my goodness, how am I ever going to finish this thing?
Yes,
every day is like this. Yeah.
Carolyn, exactly what I was thinking. And I think everybody at home had read that between the lines when they read my email home that night. I was worried. I was actually worried. What if there's more days with sandstorms, or what if there's a lot of these mountain climbing and running out of water situations? I don't know if I can do that. Like, And then I thought, no, I'm not going to let doubt set in. Not at all. That's no place to have any self-doubt right now. I'm going to take it just like I had planned, one day at a time. Day two was done with 2 hours to spare. And I thought, you know what? Tomorrow's a new day. I am just going to suck it up and I'm going to see what tomorrow holds. So it was not easy, but that night to go to sleep, and you sleep like 3-4 hours is all I slept there each night.
Oh, I want to get more into the next days and the next stages for sure. But you've mentioned running out of water. You've mentioned your pack, your heavy pack. Talk to us a bit. This race was self-supported except for water. They supplied you water at the beginning of each stage. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So what does that mean? For those listeners that don't know what self-supported means, tell us what that means, what you had to take with you, and then maybe a bit about like what, yeah, what actually did you carry in your pack? How heavy was it at the start? How heavy was it at the finish? I'm really curious about all this information.
Self-supported is exactly what it says. It's self-supported. Whatever you have is what you have, and that's only what you have. Like, they will only give you water each day. But this is something you know since you plan the race. You know that you're going to need this. You have your lists of mandatory gear that you have to have with you. My pack was 9 kilos at the start, and I didn't weigh it at the finish.
You would have consumed food, but everything else, like you had a sleeping bag, you had shoes, you had,
did you take shoes? No, shoes were just on my feet. Yes.
One pair. Okay.
Yes. No, Kim, you do not take shoes with you in the backpack. There's no room.
Okay. I get it. I'm getting it. So what was in your pack? Essentially consumables, like emergency supplies and food?
I had, there's mandatory 2000 minimum calories per day, which you have to be able to show each day. So you cannot eat tomorrow's calories today. I had just over 2000 per day, and I, not once did I eat them all. That's how little I ate.
That's not a lot of calories.
No, I burned way more.
How much weight did you lose?
About 8 to 10 pounds. And I gained it all back in the first week, just to be clear. Yeah, my shorts were getting loose and I was wearing tight shorts.
Did you wear the same clothes all the way through, or did you take a change?
Everybody did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Everybody wears the same clothes. The mandatory gear was a venom pump for snake, if you get a snake bite. You had to have a lighter, you had to have safety pins, you had to have a light with extra batteries. You had to either a headlamp or some sort of running light. Well, I just brought the headlamp and then an extra set of batteries. And then you had to have something to cook your food if it requires cooking. So I had one cup that measures one cup. And then I had these pills that you light for fuel pills. Three pills, boil one cup of water. And my dehydrated meals required 2 cups of water each. So what I did is, the water was always warm in the desert. So I poured one cup of just desert room temperature water into my food. And then, oh, and by the way, I would, I didn't have a container to eat my food out of. So I cut the water bottle every day, cut the water bottle in half. And that was my container to eat. I only brought a spoon. And then I boiled one cup of water and poured that in. So that was hot enough to dissolve the vegetables and meat or whatever my meal was, to get your meal ready. And you just let it sit, cut off the cutoff part of the bottle, put it upside down in the bottle to cover it. So minimum sand got into it. I won't say no sand.
How much sand did you eat?
Probably lots. And then I had in my pack, I had toothbrush, I had 2 washcloths, one to dry and one to wash. But I didn't use any soap or anything. It was just with water. I always had enough water left over to wash myself a little bit at the end of the day. And a couple of times I did wash my shirt. And once I washed my shorts, I brought one pair of extra shorts and one extra shirt, just in case something should happen to the one I'm wearing, which was actually really good. So I could put the extra shorts and shirt on at the end of the day and then wash my running shirt and shorts. And what I did is I cut off a water bottle, left a quarter of the water in the bottle, and then just press your shirt in and out of the water a couple of times, wring it out, and with the safety pins, pin it to the tent so it could dry in the wind. And
so you talk about these water bottles. Are these the bottles they're supplying you?
Correct.
Okay, yeah. So they're big, I'm assuming.
They're a liter and a half.
Is that all you got each day? Like, did they have a limit? I guess my question is, did they ration you on your water between yes. stages, or was it unlimited? It was rationed.
No, it's not unlimited. We had a little cart that you had to check out your water. Each time you receive a bottle, it has your bib number on the bottle. Also, if that bottle with your bib number gets found somewhere, let's say you didn't dispose of it properly in the garbage, then you get a time penalty. Mm-hmm. And no, don't forget, on two of my days, I only had 2 hours left. If I would have had a penalty, you get an hour for littering, which would be if they find your bottle with your number on it. You get an hour taken off. And I think it's 3 hours if you get IV fluids for medical assistance.
Oh, this is hardcore.
You're on all the time. Like, you can't ever fully relax.
I wasn't getting a doctor.
I'll deal with it.
Yeah. And then I had a backpack and I had a little mat to sleep on.
Okay.
That was just full, super light, and it clipped on the back, on the outside of my backpack. I did have flip-flops for the evening when I take off my shoes just to walk because there's so much rock.
Yeah.
So I had a pair of flip-flops. Actually, I had just brought those flimsy ones from the pedicure place, but they were no good. So one of the guys that dropped out on day two, there was actually two Canadians that dropped out in the sandstorm day. I asked him if I could have his flip-flops. So he gave them to me because they were a little bit sturdier.
So advice for anybody else planning on doing this, it's very rocky. Yes. In the evenings, take something more substantial for flip-flops.
Unless you're used to walking barefoot on stuff like that. There was some people that walk barefoot. Like, there was one guy that did the whole race barefoot and ever, you know.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But that's a whole podcast by itself, I think, with that guy. Yeah. That was quite something to watch.
You're talking about all these people, like, you're having this experience with others, right? Yes. And they're people that you don't know, right? Because you didn't go there with anybody. So you just met everybody there. But I can only imagine, like, I know even in short races, I meet other people and feel like we're friends and feel like a lifetime has gone by, you know, just sharing that one experience. So I can imagine that you got to know each other fairly quickly and moved together as a group sometimes and worked with each other. Like you mentioned, that one lady gave you water the one day and now this guy gave you his flip-flops. And so was there a lot of kind of camaraderie amongst the group?
100%. Yes. It's amazing. Like, so many people, like almost 1,000 runners from all over the world, all different walks of life, you know, yes. And you just all there for the same thing, you know, like you're all there to finish a very, very hard race. And everybody just wants to finish. And it's so, so nice to meet all these people. I met so many people that I'm going to stay in contact with even, you know,
yes.
Like there's this guy from Japan. He wants me to come and run the marathon in his city with him, you know, and maybe that will happen one day, you know. And he says his daughter wants to come to Canada to study. So maybe I'll meet her, you know, like you right. never know. I mean, it's just like we're in contact now and we walked yep. part of the night together. He had caught up with me and he asked if he could join me to walk through the night because he had never gone in any race through the night. And I said, of course. And it was really nice. And so we walked and we talked and got to know each other. And unfortunately, he made the race, like he finished, but he wasn't able to continue walking through the night with me. he couldn't keep up and I had my pace that I was walking. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I left him behind at one of the checkpoints and he decided to have a rest there and I decided to go on. So we didn't walk the entire night together, but I met up with him again the next day and, you know, at the finish line, we exchanged some words and stuff. And, yeah, it's just incredible how you meet these people and you get close with them. I had this one lady from Vancouver, and she had never done anything like this. Like, I mean, I had never done a stage race, but she'd never done an ultra. She was walking the entire thing. And every day I would go to her in the morning and I'd tell her, this is the distance we need to cover. This is the pace you need to watch for to make it, you know, and I would just, you know, tell her, this is what you need to do when you're like in really, really bad pain, you know, like just put it in your pain box and deal with it later. And I would just have that little chat with her every morning. And I was so worried she was going to break it, you know, not make the cutoff or drop out. And so I had every morning, I had this talk with her. And then at the end of the day, I kept going back to the tent to see if she was back yet. And she wasn't back. And sometimes she cut it really short. And she says, oh, Caroline, I came in with the camel again, because the camel is the sweeper.
Oh my goodness.
And we were laughing at us. And I said, you know what? I don't care if you come in with the camel, you will have lots of camel pictures. But I don't care if you make it in with the camel. I'm just so happy to be here. So we would always give her a big hug. And so it was just incredible. The bond, now I want to go to Vancouver and we want to go hiking together. And it was just so many nice people I met along the way. And I think it was on day three where we had these three mountains to climb and summit. And it was just so hard for me. It was so hot and it was terrifying. It was just terrifying for me. The wind would catch you. And there's this lady from Germany. She got totally spun around by the wind on way on top and this rock. She hit her leg on the rock really bad and she was bleeding and it was so bruised and swollen right away by her knee. And I thought, oh, poor lady, she's got to, you know, continue on. And she finished. I saw her at the hotel later. She said, yes, I finished. I finished all stages. And I was so, you know, happy for her. She got so hurt up on that mountain and I was so worried about her. And I was worried myself for falling. I was so scared. If it hadn't been for my poles, you know, just bracing myself on some of the descending on over the rocks, it was so steep going down. Even some climbs going up, you had to pull yourself on a rope.
It okay.
Bolted mm-hmm. into, yeah, because you just kept sliding back the sand, the rocks and in the sand. It would just slide you back if you didn't hold on to that rope.
So you talk about, you know, the people with such affection in your voice. And I can hear that the relationships and the connections you made were a real highlight for you in this race. Yes. Is there anything else that kind of stands out as a high or a best memory moment?
Yes, absolutely. They had this concert in the middle of the desert after the long stage. It was absolutely breathtaking, an incredible, incredible moment. They just announced and said that they were going to have a concert for the runners to come. Like all the tents are set up in a circle. So in the center of this circle where all the tents are, they set up the stage and the sun had just set over the mountains and it was calm. The wind died down. They put out carpets on the ground. And all these hundreds of athletes that haven't showered for a week, you all stink like crazy and are so dirty. And our feet are bandaged and we're in our little flip-flops, you know, hobbling over the rocks, coming to the circle and sit down on the carpet. And they opened this orchestra and an opera singer that had come in from Paris. It was just magical. That's all I can say. It was just magical under an umbrella of stars. So many people were just crying because they were so touched and emotional about this. It was just so nice. And I, you know, like people that I met the day before on day one, and you see them and they come and you give each other a hug. And it was
like
just
summer
so,
camp in the desert.
It was exactly. It was like you forget how hard you worked the day climbing the mountains, how scared you were or how much your feet hurt and were blistered. It all kind of went away. It just kind of so magical moment. It was just incredible.
Did you know that was coming? Like, had they done that in previous years, or was this a total surprise to you?
You know, I remembered reading about it and hearing about it, but nobody had really talked about it. I completely forgot about it and I hadn't expected it.
Okay.
So it was kind of like a surprise, but I knew that in the past years they had had some entertainment during the race. And also that day of the long stage at the finish line, which I didn't get because I finished the long stage just as the sun was coming up, because I had walked, like, I had walked and run the whole day and through the whole night, and I just came into the finish line. And this is kind of like a funny thing. As I'm approaching the finish line, I'm finishing this long stage and I'm just like so done already. I just wanted to take my shoes off and wash my feet and, you know, lay down on my sleeping bag. And you know the arch where you run underneath?
Yeah.
The whole thing was falling down just in front of me.
Oh,
and I'm just like, should I cry or should I laugh? It's just like all coming down. And then there's these four Moroccan guys. They just ran like crazy and they're lifting it up and they're showing me, just come, come. They're just like, they're holding it. You can see it on the live camera at the finish line. You can see how they're standing and holding and I'm running underneath.
Was, oh my gosh.
It was funny. But then you got a can of Coke. And I didn't get the Coke at the finish line because it was early in the morning. But people that finished later in the day, they got it at the finish line, and I could go later in the afternoon and pick mine up. So I got a can of Coke and I just kind of sat there and drank it right away while it was still cold.
Oh, for writer. That was just such a treat.
That was it such a treat. Be. Yes. Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
So maybe walk us through the last day then, like as you were coming up to the finish line and knowing, you know, this is the day, this is like, it's happening, right? There was never a question in your mind after that point.
The last day was the marathon distance.
And oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was the marathon distance. And I was kind of a little bit worried because I didn't know for sure what was like what the elevation would be, like how quickly can I go through that marathon? Will it be like a really painful long with lots of climbing and stuff? And it was actually quite runnable. Also, my pack by then is getting lighter.
Right.
Towards the end of the week. So, and my heels were very, very blistered because I heel strike when I power walk. So the heels were so blistered. And it just was less painful to run at that point because I used my forefoot and I gave my heels a break. So I did, I would say about 65% of that marathon, I was able to run at a slow pace because it was so runnable. Like there, it was fairly flat. You go through some villages and actually we saw a few trees and there was one paved road we have to cross.
You crossed it. You didn't get to go on it.
We had to go on it. We crossed it. But I thought, oh my goodness, there's pavement. There is people living here, I guess, somewhere, you know, because there was a road. And it was quite runnable that. Lots of dried out lagoons we went through or over. Like, so it was very flat. And it was, so that one was the last stage. And then I came up to the finish line. You could see the finish line for so long and you keep going like these rolling hills, a little bit of sand, some are a bit rocky, but I just kept going at my pace. And like every time you're up on the hill, you could see the finish line, you could hear it, but then you go back down and then it still seems
like
so
Spruce Woods.
Far. Yes. That was the runnable part, like Spruce Woods.
But that hill, the can't see it anymore. Yeah. You go. Yeah. So let me interrupt you here for a second. So there was the charity stage, but was that after the official 250 kilometers?
Actually, it's part of it.
Oh, okay. So what did you consider the finish?
I considered the marathon because that's where we got our medal.
Okay.
A little bit confusing why they have it that way, but the charity stage is still part of the 250. You still have to complete it. If you don't, you do get disqualified. which two people actually chose to not do the 7.7 kilometers and got disqualified. Can you believe it?
Oh my.
When they announced that at the start, I'm not sure what exactly the reason was, but I think it was for medical reasons. I believe so. But there was two people that actually didn't do the last 7 kilometers the next day. And you got to sleep in that day. I mean, not that you sleep, but you have more time to rest, right? Because you used to have a later start and you can just kind of walk. Some family came in, some friends came in. Most people just walked that. And you just kind of took pictures along the way and you just talk along the way. And but just going back quickly here to that marathon stage.
Absolutely. Let's
talk
about that.
So finally, I am running towards the finish and now I'm not going to stop. Now I'm just going to run till I actually finally get there because enough of this. I can see it. I can't see it. I can see it still seems so far away. And my feet were just killing me and everything was just kind of hurting. And I was starting to cry and I thought, no, I can't breathe if I cry. I can't cry. And then, and I was getting so emotional. I thought, oh my God, you know, here I am. I wanted this challenge for so long. I've been preparing for it. I've been working so many overtime hours to be able to pay for it. And everything just kind of, all these emotions just kind of all overcame me. And I crossed that finish line and I saw the race director, Patrick is his name. He came up to me, he put that medal around my neck and he gave me this big hug. And I just started crying and sobbing on his shoulder and he hugged me so tight and he's talking and talking in French and I don't understand a single word he's saying. Still don't know what he said, but he kept talking to me and then he grabbed my face like this and he talked to me in French and he kept talking and I just said, thank you, thank you. No idea what he said, but then he gave me a hug again and then he walked with me for a little bit and it was just so many emotions, you know, I actually did it. I finished, you know, and just the next day just didn't matter anymore. Like that we still have to do the 7 kilometers. Who cares? You know, like I've done, comes this far and that's just going to be fine. And what I did for the very last day, this, the charity stage, the lady from Vancouver, she's been walking all by herself through the whole entire week. She's gone all on her own by herself. And I went to her tent when she finished that marathon that night. And I went to her and I said, tomorrow I will be walking with you and we're going to go at your pace. Whatever you can do, we're going to do. I said, on a friendship run, nobody should walk alone. So we will do it together. And then that's what we did. We took so many pictures. We even emptied some of our little Ziploc bags from our snacks and took some sand from the dunes home. And you know,
souvenir.
And then we crossed that last finish line together. And it was such a special moment. Yeah, it was really, really special. And then she decided to come and stay at my hotel in Paris. So we went to Paris together, went out for dinner after we got there. And we stayed at the hotel together too in Morocco. We had another day, the whole day yet by ourselves there. Well, with everyone together. So we spent that time together as well.
You will have lifelong relationships and friendships now with these people, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What a special thing. Like what 1,000 people on the planet per year get to experience this. Like that's a very, very select few of a very unique race. So Caroline, was it what you expected? Did you get what you were looking for?
I think I got so much more. I was looking for a challenge and a new, different kind of experience. And I got all that. Plus I got so much more. Like I made all these friends that I knew I was going to meet people, but I actually, like I made friends. And like you said, they're going to be lifelong friends in some way, you know, I'm sure we're doing hikes together or maybe meeting at a different race sometime. And, you know, so it's, I totally got what I expected. Definitely.
I've heard running described as a relationship accelerator before. Yes. And I wrote that down because I'm like, that is so true. Like you 100%. Kind of live a lifetime inside of like such a compressed amount of time. And I would say from the sounds of this race, it sure does sound like a relationship accelerator. So
that's absolutely incredible. So glad I didn't let the doubt get to me on day two. And I, that's the day I told myself that became my new mantra, is I didn't get this far to only come this far. I have to make it through each day.
Looking back and thinking about that day too, because it does sound like that was one of the biggest lows in the race for you. Does it make kind of the fact that you finished feel that much more satisfying because you went through day two?
Yes. And it wasn't just that I went through day two. I finished day two and I put my shoes back on my blistered feet on day three and went back out there and every day.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So what would you tell someone, like if they're listening to this and they're like, that's the challenge for me. Like, I want to look into this race. I want to do this race. What would you say to somebody who's thinking about this race?
I would say exactly what other people told me, is if that is something you are intrigued by, you want to experience, if it's your dream, just go for it. Mm-hmm. Let nothing hold you back. Like, just do it. If you really want it bad enough, you can make it happen. I mean, if I do it, you can. You know, if I can do it, you can do it.
Oh, I don't know, Caroline. You're a pretty tough lady. I don't know if there's a lot of people could do what you can do. But on that note, like you've been running for many years. Like you said, you've almost become comfortable with the 100-mile distance. Like, who becomes comfortable with 100 miles?
Well, apparently, let Caroline, me tell you, you got to become comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. Yes. That is the slogan that so many ultras live by. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So my question is, was there still anything left to learn about yourself? Did you discover a new part about yourself in this race?
I always knew you could do hard things, but I learned that I can do, you know, like hard, I can work hard physically and be drained emotionally and sleep deprived and keep going day after day, even if you take in very little food. If you put your mind to it, like I never once in the 7 days allowed myself to get hungry for something that I would normally have in an ultra, like cold watermelon or a Coke or ginger ale. I didn't even think about those things because I had just put my mind to it. This is what I have in my backpack, and this is what I'm going to eat, and this is all I have for now, and it's only 1 week. Like, everybody can do 1 week, you know?
Right.
Like, take it a day at a time and keep going till that week is done. And I just, you know, like I learned that if you really put your mind to it, it is possible. Like I think I discovered my mental strength even more, like myself. Yeah. You know, people always tell me how strong I am mentally. I didn't feel it so much as I did it during this week. I really felt mentally strong and prepared for the challenge.
You can just hear it in your voice. There's no question. Yeah. There's no room for ambiguity. I decided I wasn't going to have watermelon or even want watermelon. Like, that is discipline. That is mental strength to a T, especially in a hot desert. I can't imagine. I'd be hallucinating about watermelon and pina coladas and all those juicy things.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay, well, was there anything that you went for as soon as you could after the race? We often ask about a post-run indulgence. So when you finally had watermelon and pina coladas on the table, like, what were you lusting after this race?
You know what? I ate salads, fresh vegetables, fresh fruits. I couldn't get enough of it. Mm. Like they had at the hotel, they had this huge salad bar, and I was just like, I just wanted every salad, you know.
Salad, okay.
I know, it's just like something fresh, you know, like been living off of bars and dehydrated meals and warm water, although they don't have any ice, I don't think, in Morocco, because I never saw any. So I did that, but the first thing when we finished that 7 kilometer fun run, charity stage, we all went right to the bus, and then we had a 6-hour bus ride.
Oh no.
To sit with your feet down in a bus. Luckily, our bus wasn't full, so I was able to go to the back and pick 2 seats so I could put my feet up. because you have everything that you have for the week you have with you, right? So I had my flip-flops and I was able to take off my shoes and put my flip-flops on and then just elevate my feet for most of the 6 hours. So that was good. They didn't swell up too bad because the next morning I put compression socks on. But anyway, back to the food. About 2 hours into the drive, they pulled over. There was, I think, 6 buses in our group there that had left all at the same time. And they all pulled over on the side of the highway. And we're in a desert. There's not a tree in sight. It was so incredibly hot. And then we all had to get off the bus to go pee. They gave us a bagged lunch. And in that bag, there was a fresh green apple. I'm telling you, I smelt it. And it smelled so good. I almost got, like, I got tears in my eyes. And I bit into that apple. My hands, my fingernails have never been so dirty. And my hands, they look so dirty, although I had used a wipe to try to clean them off before I ate. Mm-hmm. But they were so dirty, and I bit into that apple, and the juice ran between my fingers, and I just licked my dirty hand. Apple. I didn't want to lose a drop of it. It was the best apple I ever had. Oh, I just absolutely enjoyed that apple so much. I'll never forget the smell of that apple, I don't think.
Wow. It really must make you appreciate even more the simple things like a shower, like fresh fruit, like some of those, just a bed,
salad.
Right? Yes. Salad, the things that we sometimes try to avoid and get out of that are good for us, that are luxuries in yes. certain situations and places of the world.
Yeah. When we got to the hotel, just to get into that shower, it was incredible. Good feeling just to stand there and watch that sand go down the drain. Yeah. I think
I can only imagine how great that felt. And how did your recovery go? I have to ask about that. Like, I can imagine you talked about blisters, you talked about swollen legs and stuff like that. So how long has it been since it finished, and how have you felt in that time?
Well, today's Monday. I guess yesterday would have been 2 weeks, right?
Okay.
I think that recovery went well, and as expected. I haven't really done a lot of running since, a little bit on the treadmill, and my legs felt really fine pretty early on. Like, they felt okay. It was my feet that needed to heal, and I didn't want to, you know, rub open the soft spots. I had a couple of really, really big blisters that needed to heal, and they're all good now, so...
I can only imagine what the answer to this next question is. So, what's next? What comes after an event, an experience like MDS? What have you got on your agenda for this year and maybe even for the next few years?
Well, this year, I don't know. I'll see how I feel and how running goes over the next few weeks. But thinking about maybe going to Regina for the Canada Goose Ultra. Feel like I have some unfinished business there because I signed up for the 24-hour run there before and I only ran 12 and got sick and didn't feel well. So I stopped at 12 hours. I thought maybe give it another go for 24, but we'll see how recovery goes. And then signed up for Epic Eastgate 50. Mm-hmm. Never done that one before, so that'll be a first for me.
That's in Western Manitoba. Sorry.
Yeah, Dauphin, Riding Mountain, I believe, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where they just got 70 centimeters of snow.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Yeah, that's right. So
that'll be gone by next
week. Yeah. So that's, but other than that, I don't have anything. Hennepin 100, I'm signed up for, it's, I think, 2 years now rolled over because of the pandemic.
Okay.
We'll see if I go or not. I'm signed up for it. It's in October, I believe.
Do you think you'll ever do another multi-day stage race?
I'm positive I will. Yes, I've looked at a couple already.
But and we interviewed a couple that does them, you know, fairly frequently.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure if you've listened to that one, and I'll put the episode in the show notes, but you'll get some good ideas from them. Yes. They've done them all over the world.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely look into that.
I know, spoiler alert, I mean, I have heard you speak a little bit on some news media interviews about this, and you did indicate that there's too many races out there on the planet to maybe go back and do MDS, but that you definitely are intrigued by the whole multi-day sport thing. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll go back and do MDS again, but it's just like you said, and I've said before, you know, this world is big and has so much to offer, and, you know, we're not getting any younger. So I'd like to just go explore other parts of the world if I can, if I stay healthy and, and I'm able to, then I would like to go do a different one for sure.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us this evening on our podcast. I'm sure there's many runners. This is possibly the first time that they've heard about MDS. And now they know more than the average person. You've definitely intrigued me. And just thank you so much for sharing your story, and congratulations. Double high five. Yeah. Very, very proud of you, Caroline. You represented Canada and Manitoba and Winnipeg and
women,
female ultra runners who aren't 20 anymore. Like all of it. Like you were out there really just answering that why not question, right? And we're really proud of you.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.